Have you noticed a sudden wave of your favorite artists, you know, just quietly canceling their 2026 summer tours?
Oh, yeah. It's everywhere right now.
You log on to social media and suddenly there's like a notes app apology about scheduling conflicts or taking time to heal.
Right, but if you peek behind the curtain, or rather, if you look at the Ticketmaster seating charts right before the plug gets pulled, you see the real story.
Exactly. It's this phenomenon taking over the internet called Blue Dot Fever. Today we are taking a deep dive into this entire situation.
Yes, and to do that, we're looking through a whole stack of entertainment news articles, industry reports, and some pretty detailed economic research.
Because our mission today is to uncover whether the live music industry is actually collapsing, or if, you know, social media is just blowing a few canceled shows out of proportion.
And most importantly, what this all means for your wallet the next time you decide you want to buy a concert ticket.
Right, so to really understand the underlying mechanisms here, we have to start by contrasting the public spin with the actual economic reality.
Because before we get into the root causes, the PR gymnastics happening right now are just fascinating.
Oh, they're incredibly creative. Artists are canceling shows left and right, and the official statements are, well, let's take Post Malone, for example.
Right, with his big-ass stadium tour.
Yeah, he recently pushed back dates for that tour, telling fans he needed more time to finish his new double album, The Eternal Buzz. He said the music simply wasn't ready.
Which, I mean, sounds perfectly reasonable on the surface.
Totally. But local news in El Paso actually pulled up the Ticketmaster map for his Sun Bowl Stadium show just hours before that announcement.
And what did they find?
It was a ghost town. Just a vast ocean of blue dots.
Ah, there it is. The dreaded blue dots. And Meghan Trainor did something really similar, right?
She did. She canceled her entire Get In Girl tour, stating she needed to balance the release of her new album, Toy With Me, with welcoming her third child, Mikey Moon Trainor, into the world.
And again, family comes first. Nobody is questioning that.
Exactly. Family is everything. But the timing was super suspicious. Industry research indicated that prior to the cancellation, tickets for her shows were popping up on discount sites like Groupon for just
$22. $22? That's like less than a t-shirt at the merch stand.
Literally. And then you have legacy acts like Dolly Parton and Zayn Malik, who both cited health, recovery, and healing as the reasons for pulling back their 2026 dates.
So all these statements basically create a narrative that the industry is just suffering about of bad luck or scheduling conflicts or personal emergencies.
Right. It's never about the money.
Yeah.
Until you look at the rare, honest outlier.
Kiefer Sutherland.
Yes. The actor and musician. He's currently touring his fourth studio album, Grey, and he canceled the U.S. leg of his tour and released a statement that was just brutally honest.
He didn't blame the studio or his health, did he?
Nope. He flat out said it was due to very low ticket sales. He added that it just wasn't fair to the fans who did buy tickets or to the venues to play to half-empty houses.
Which is completely fair. Nobody wants to stand in a cavernous, empty room. But a lack of ticket sales isn't always just a simple lack of interest in the music itself. Sometimes it's deeply tied to how the product is packaged.
What do you mean by packaged?
Well, this brings us to the concept of nostalgia economics. We can look at the really messy North American tour cancellation for the Pussycat Dolls as a prime case study.
Oh, that situation was completely wild.
It was, because when a legacy pop group announces a reunion, the fans are essentially buying a ticket for nostalgia. They're paying to relive a highly specific memory from, say, 2005.
Right.
And nostalgia is a highly inelastic product. Fans want the exact lineup they remember.
But this specific reunion tour completely excluded foundational members, right? Carmen Bachar and Jessica Setta.
Exactly. In fact, reports indicated they found out about the tour at the exact same time the public did via social media.
Oh, wow. That is harsh.
Add to that, former member Melody Thornton speaking out about feeling undervalued, and then a highly publicized lawsuit involving their former manager, Robin Anton.
So the product essentially broke. The drama entirely dilutes the brand value.
Right. It ceases to be the pure, joyful nostalgia trip the fans were promised. If you alter the variables of a memory, the perceived value drops to zero.
And then ticket sales stall, the blue dots multiply, and the tour collapses.
Exactly. Brand dilution is a major factor for legacy acts, but it doesn't explain the broader industry trend.
Right. Because modern, relevant artists are also staring at seas of blue dots.
So to understand why that is, we have to look at the underlying economics of the empty seat.
And this makes no sense to me at first glance. If we rewind just a couple of years to the end of the pandemic, fans were absolutely desperate for live music.
Oh, they were rabid for it.
People were paying $1,000 for nosebleed seats just to get back into a stadium. It feels like the demand just evaporated overnight.
Well, it didn't evaporate. It hit a mathematical wall. The break-even point for arena tours has completely shifted.
The way I think about it, booking an arena tour right now is kind of like trying to throw a huge destination wedding during an economic downturn.
That's a great analogy.
You have to rent the venue, hire the catering, fly in the band, pay for the lighting, secure the insurance. All of those are fixed costs.
Right.
And if half your guests RSVP no, the venue doesn't cut your rental fee in half. The lighting riggers don't charge you 50% less.
Exactly. And we can break those fixed costs down even further because they have exploded since 2019.
How so?
Well, you aren't just paying for a venue, you're leasing up to 18 semi-trucks to haul the staging. And commercial diesel prices and logistics costs have surged.
Right. Fuel is not cheap.
Plus, you're paying union rates for local stagehands, which have rightly increased to match cost of living adjustments. And post-2020, liability and cancellation insurance premiums for large-scale public gatherings have absolutely skyrocketed.
Wow, so the baseline just to open the doors is massive.
Huge. A few years ago, an artist might break even by selling 60% of the arena. Today, that break-even point might be 80 or 85%.
The fixed costs simply do not care if your arena is glowing blue.
They don't. And the consumer's ability to bail out those high fixed costs has completely vanished.
Because right after the lockdowns, we experienced what economists called funflation. People had stockpiled stimulus cash and savings because they couldn't go out to dinner or take vacations for 2 years. So when tours came back, fans essentially threw their wallets at Ticketmaster.
But that financial buffer is gone now. Fans are operating in a reality of high inflation.
Yeah, the everyday stuff.
Exactly. They are facing steep, unavoidable costs for groceries, rent, auto insurance. The discretionary income that used to go toward concert tickets is being eaten up by basic necessities.
So fans haven't lost their love for music. They've just become hyper-selective out of pure financial survival.
Precisely.
According to research, average concert tickets have risen 27% since 2019.
27%? That's a huge jump.
And if you want to go to a stadium show, those tickets have jumped 35%. Mm. You cannot outrun inflation forever. The breaking point had to happen.
And we are seeing the real-world consequences of that breaking point, not just with individual artists, but with legacy institutions.
Like what?
Consider Australia's Blues Fest. This was a 36-year-old, globally recognized festival, and it was abruptly canceled just weeks before it was set to take place in April.
Oh, wow. Weeks before?
Yes. The organizers explicitly cited softer ticket demand.
And it wasn't just a quiet cancellation where everyone got their money back, right?
No, it was a disaster. The festival went into liquidation.
Wait, they went bankrupt?
Yes. They owe over $23 million to 20,000 unsecured ticket holders.
Oh my gosh. That is unbelievable.
And reports suggest those fans are highly unlikely to ever see refunds. It's a harsh, real-time reminder that when the music stops, the financial fallout is incredibly severe.
Okay, so the artists are struggling, and the fans are obviously broke. But what are the ticketing platforms seeing? Like, are they panicking too?
You would think so, but no. If you look at Live Nation, the world's largest promoter and ticketing company, they completely reject the Blue Dot narrative.
Wait, really? Their official stance is that there's no crisis.
They claim there is no crisis at all. They state that out of all the shows on their books, less than 1% have been canceled. They're actually reporting that 2026 is shaping up to be a record year, with ticket sales up by 11%.
Okay, how does that math work?
Because the live music industry is no longer a single unified economy. It has fractured into two completely different realities.
Right.
The system works beautifully for the top 1% of megastars, your Taylor Swifts, your Beyoncés, your Bad Bunnies. For those artists, demand vastly outstrips supply. Millions of people want tickets, and there are only tens of thousands of seats.
And that is exactly where the ticketing platforms extract their maximum value. I was reading a U.S. Senate report that came out recently titled "So Casually Cruel," which investigated Ticketmaster's practices.
Oh, that report was eye-opening.
It really was. It revealed internal strategies where the platform actively pushed artists to use platinum ticket allocations and dynamic pricing.
Dynamic pricing algorithms are the core engine here. The system monitors supply and demand in real time.
So it's watching what everyone is clicking on.
Exactly. It looks at how many people are sitting in the digital queue, how fast tickets are moving into shopping carts, and even click rates on specific seating sections.
Wow.
If the algorithm detects a surge of interest in the lower bowl, the prices for those specific seats automatically fluctuate upward in real time. It's much like airline tickets or surge pricing on a rideshare app.
So basically, the platform built their own sanitized in-house scalping system.
That's one way to look at it, yeah.
Instead of a guy on the street corner marking up a $100 ticket to $400, the algorithm does it instantly. And the platform and the artist capture that surplus revenue.
Right. And for a global megastar, the seats still sell out, the gross revenue skyrockets, and Live Nation gets to report an 11% increase in sales.
Okay, that makes sense for the 1%. But what happens to the middle-class musician?
That is the critical issue. Mid-tier artists, the ones who have a solid, dedicated fan base but aren't necessarily shifting the cultural zeitgeist, they are caught in the crossfire.
Because the fixed costs of touring have exploded for them, too.
Exactly. They are pushed into utilizing the same high-priced ticketing infrastructure just to break even.
But their fans simply cannot afford dynamic pricing. Like, if I'm a fan, I might scrape together $500 as a once-in-a-lifetime treat to see a global icon.
Right.
But I am absolutely not paying $500 for a Tuesday night arena show to see an artist I just casually enjoy.
No, nobody is. But the algorithm pushes the price past the fan's breaking point anyway.
So the artist gets completely alienated from their own community. The tickets stop moving, and the venue becomes a sea of blue dots.
Exactly. The infrastructure built for the 1% is being applied to the other 99%, and the math fails spectacularly.
So mid-tier artists can't magically lower the cost of commercial diesel, and they can't force fans to find extra money to feed a dynamic pricing algorithm.
Right, right.
They have to adapt their entire touring strategy to survive this landscape.
And they are adapting. The primary counter-strategy the industry is heavily pivoting toward is known as right-sizing, or the underplay.
Yes, I found the mechanics of the underplay fascinating in the research. It's essentially about intentionally controlling supply to artificially manufacture scarcity, right?
Precisely. Instead of booking a 15,000-seat arena and hoping you can fill it, which risks those blue dots and total financial ruin, an artist intentionally books a much smaller venue.
Like a theater or a club with maybe 2,000 or 3,000 seats.
Yes. A sold-out room of 2,000 is infinitely more valuable to an artist's brand than a half-empty room of 5,000, even if they are technically leaving money on the table in that specific market.
Because it guarantees that the fixed costs are covered entirely.
Exactly. Plus, it creates a sweaty, packed, high-energy atmosphere for the fans in attendance. And most importantly, it creates profound FOMO fear of missing out across the wider fan base. The research highlights an indie rock band from 2025 named Geese, who weaponized this perfectly.
Oh, they are a brilliant case study. Geese had the streaming numbers and the cultural momentum to easily justify booking large concert halls. Instead, they purposely underplayed their hand.
Interesting.
They booked sweaty 500-capacity clubs, fully knowing they would sell out every single ticket in minutes.
Because the supply was so tightly restricted, it generated an absolute frenzy. It created intense FOMO, the fear of missing out. People always want what they are told they cannot have.
Exactly.
The data notes that the buzz surrounding this tour drove the secondary market completely wild. Resale tickets on platforms like StubHub were reportedly going for up to $2,000 a seat, all for an indie rock band playing a small club.
That is the immense power of a sold-out room. It generates a perception of cultural urgency.
So this naturally leads to a really glaring question. If right-sizing a tour saves money, creates a far superior atmosphere for the fans, and can even drive up demand through scarcity, why doesn't every single struggling artist just downgrade their venue? Why do we still see outright, highly publicized cancellations from major names like Meghan Trainor or the Pussycat Dolls?
This is the real aha moment of the entire situation, and it comes down to the brutal, unyielding legal contracts governing the live entertainment space. An artist cannot simply snap their fingers and downgrade a show from an arena to a theater. The logistical reality prevents it.
It's not like changing a dinner reservation from a table of 12 down to a table of 2.
Not even close.
Yeah.
Major stadium and arena tours require years of advanced planning and incredibly complex legal agreements. When an artist books a stadium, they sign a contract with a minimum financial guarantee. The arena's business model isn't just about renting the stage, you know.
Right. They have other ways they make money.
They rely heavily on ancillary revenue. They project their quarterly earnings based on selling 15,000 overpriced beers, 15,000 parking spaces, and taking a percentage of the merchandise sales.
So if the artist only brings in 3,000 people, the venue's profit margins are completely destroyed.
Which is exactly why the contracts include severe penalty fees and non-refundable deposits. If an artist tries to back out of an arena contract to play a smaller theater down the street, they're often in breach of a radius clause.
Oh, what's that?
It's a legal stipulation preventing them from playing competing venues in the same market within a certain time frame.
So if they admit the show isn't selling and try to downgrade, they could legally owe the arena millions of dollars in lost projected revenue.
Exactly the issue.
Oh.
By the time an artist's management realizes the ticket sales are fatally weak, the concrete has already dried on these contracts.
Wow.
The routing logistics for the trucking fleets are locked in. The staging has been custom built for an arena floor and literally will not fit through the loading dock doors of a 3,000-seat theater.
This explains the vague PR statements perfectly. Claiming a scheduling conflict or exhaustion isn't just about protecting the singer's fragile ego. It is a vital legal shield.
That's the mechanism at play. If an artist claims illness, exhaustion, or a production delay, it often triggers a completely different clause in the contract or allows them to lean on their cancellation insurance to cover the financial liabilities owed to the promoters and the venues.
That makes so much sense.
If they simply admitted, hey, we aren't selling enough tickets, so we are going to play a smaller club instead, they would be on the hook for the entire arena guarantee. So when the Blue Dogs multiply and the underplay isn't contractually or physically possible, the only choice left on the table is to pull the plug completely and craft a polite excuse for social media.
Which brings us full circle. The next time you see a beloved artist post a heartfelt, stylized graphic on their Instagram citing unforeseen album production delays or a sudden need to spend more time with family as the reason for a scrapped tour, you will know exactly what to do. You go to the ticketing website, you pull up the seating charts for the canceled dates, and you look for the blue dots.
Because what we are really witnessing is a perfect storm ripping through the live events sector. It is a collision of macroeconomic factors. You have post-pandemic inflation squeezing the discretionary income of the fans.
Yeah.
You have dynamic pricing algorithms that arrogantly assumed consumers would tolerate 35% price hikes forever. And you have staggering, inescapable fixed logistical costs, trapping the artists in a financial model that no longer functions for anyone outside the absolute top 1% of global superstars.
It is a stark reminder of a truth that is incredibly easy to forget when you are standing in a crowd caught up in the emotional magic of live music. At the end of the day, the music business is exactly that, a business.
Yes, it is.
It operates on rigid profit margins, complex logistical supply chains, and consumer demand elasticity. When the mathematical reality breaks down, all the passion and artistic intent in the world cannot force the show to go on.
The math always wins.
It really is a sobering realization, but it leaves us with something really important to mull over as we watch this industry try to correct itself. We've spent this entire deep dive talking about established mid-tier artists, people with recognizable names, radio hits, and millions of Spotify streams who are being forced off the road by these insurmountable fixed costs and algorithmic pricing errors.
Right.
But what does this mean for the completely new, independent artist trying to break in? Are we entering an era where live music becomes an exclusive luxury good and touring is a risk only megastars can afford to take?
It creates an almost insurmountable barrier to entry. That is the long-term consequence of the blue dot fever. It's not just about canceled pop tours today. Mm. It's about whether the infrastructure for discovering tomorrow's artists can even survive this economic climate. And it's a question the entire live entertainment ecosystem is going to have to answer very soon before the well dries up completely.
It really puts the true cost of a concert ticket into perspective. We want to say a huge thank you to the listeners for tuning in and exploring this incredibly complex topic with us today. The next time you're feeling the sharp disappointment of a canceled show and reading a vague PR statement, just remember, sometimes the real sickness in the industry isn't a mysterious virus or sudden exhaustion. It is just a terminal case of the blue dots. We'll catch you on the next deep dive.